Hello and welcome to not another episode of Dice Exploder. This week, I'm bringing you an episode of a new podcast that I'm excited about, Lyrical Ludology, a show from Logan Timmons all about lyric games. If you've listened to the Dice Exploder about We Are But Worms, you know how much I love these games. Logan's a great designer, the trailer, really good, and the episodes are only like 10 minutes long. Anyway, get excited. Here is Logan with Lyrical Ludology.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, or night, and welcome to Lyrical Ludology, the podcast exploring the lyric games niche of tabletop role-playing games. As ever, I'm your host, Logan Timmons.
And this is the second episode with Jay Dragon, so thanks for coming back. In this episode, we talk a bit more about lyric games' place in the broader tabletop scene, and we'll go into what makes lyric games a bit unique, you know?
And part of what makes lyric games special is that they're not made for mass audience, right? Like, I have heard criticisms of lyric games, which include the very spurious claim that lyric games exist kind of as a marketing object, which is just not true, right? Like, I have released games with and without lyric game tags and observed the drop. Like, if you call a game a lyric game, people are not necessarily going to buy it. It's a lot of people who are going to be like, that's not for me, which is okay. But like, if it's a marketing thing, it's a really bad marketing thing. It's not good at what it's claiming to be.
It's not doing it, yeah.
It's not doing it. But I think that lyric games, part of what makes them special is that they are freed from the market. Like, not fully, right? You know, Itch.io is a marketplace. A lot of game designers moonlight as small businessmen for varying degrees of, you know, is that a good thing? But lyric games are things that you can make and make as a zine and put out into the world, and you don't give a shit if anyone plays it, right? But that's not why it's being made. And that, I think, is very freeing, because we're at a point in RPGs where that's possible, when that wasn't always historically possible, right? There have been many times in RPGs when you could not afford to make a game that no one would play, and if you did, no one would read it, whereas now we're, you know, in a lot of ways, we're fortunate.
Yeah, a lot more ease of access, just putting something out there, being proud of it, you know, putting it in a jam, and, you know, that doesn't guarantee anyone will see it either.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, part of lyric games is designing it is a whole experience that's quite different to designing a story game as well, and that's almost another method of playing the lyric game, is making the lyric game in the first place.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I use lyric games, or I used to when I would write them explicitly as opposed to now. A lot of my games are lyric informed, but I don't really put out pure lyric games anymore. But a lot of why I made lyric games was as a sketchbook, right? That would basically be like, I have an idea about a thing about game design, and well, like an idea for a thing that would be really interesting if there was a game that was this way. Can I write that, right? What would it mean to write that? Can I put that down on a page? There's one lyric game I made that is like, the thing of it is, it's an actual play report where I'm like, I wasn't allowed to learn the rules of the game, but I talked to some mountains who revealed to me the rules of the game. Or I've got like a lyric game that's like, here's a game that is meant to be played over the course of 50 years in one location. Like, you go back to this forest every month and do something to the forest. You like nail a tarot card to the tree. And that is also like, that's also kind of unplayable, you know, but also, like, that's not really why I made it. I didn't make it to be like, dear God, I hope someone spends the next 50 years of their life playing this game. I made it as, what would it mean for a game to take 50 years to play? What would go into a game that has that kind of framework and structure in it?
Totally. And as a player of that game, I'm not going to play that game. I'm not going to make it to the same forest every month for 50 years. But thinking about how, what does it mean to build relationship with that place and see my effect on a place that's much older than I am, or be here after I'm gone and has been here many, you know, however long before I'm here, even thinking about that is like a huge experience that is not an everyday occurrence, and that makes that game super special. Even just reading it, playing it, you know, going to this forest a couple of times and imagining myself in 50 years doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, that game comes out of homelessness, right? Like, I was writing that during an incredibly precarious, well, like, I didn't have a stable home. I lost my stable home. I didn't think I'd ever have one again. And so in a set of unplayable or challenging-to-play games, the idea of a magic spell that makes a place a home felt just as unplayable as a game where you talk to a sword or a game where you end the world, right? Those all felt equivalently magical and distant, which is what made them appealing, right? Because I think that a lot of games are not really feasible to play, right? Like Dungeons & Dragons, if you take apart the book, large chunks of it do not exist to be played with, right? Like, at level 20 mechanics are not there to get you to play. They're there to get you to daydream about playing or to imagine playing. And so similarly, why not have a game that's just that from the get-go, right? So it's that experimental thinking about game mechanics. It's very, like, inside baseball for game designers, but I think that's important too, right? Why can't game designers have inside baseball?
Inside baseball? Is this an Americanism I'm not aware of?
Yes, this is an American phrase. So it's a phrase that's used to refer to stuff that only makes sense to people who are in the know. Aaron Lynn was posting about this on Twitter the other day. I don't remember what they called it, but they had like a phrase for it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where it's been like eating so much of a food, you stop looking for what tastes good and you start looking for what tastes interesting.
Mm.
And that's inside baseball, right? Where it's, or it's like a comedian making jokes that are only funny to other comedians, right? That lay people are not getting, but other comedians find really funny. It's like, I'm making a game that's not for Joe Schmo who plays D&D, you know, once a month. Which, like, I love people like that. I do make a lot of games for people like that.
Mm.
But my lyric games are not for that person. My lyric games are for people who are weird about it.
Yes, yes.
And, like, the main people I've met who resonate with my lyric games are other game designers or mentally ill teenagers, which I think are my two main demographics.
There's a lot of overlap.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, all mentally ill teenagers are just dank game designers in the making, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that thread of Aaron's making games for game designers. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a very different design space.
Yes, absolutely.
It's very fun. And I'm curious, because I think for Sleepaway, it feels very lyric game informed, like you were saying, especially with the Lindworm. So I'm curious, in your view, does that make Sleepaway a lyric game or just lyric game informed? And, like, is there a line that you have or that, or is that just for you? Yeah.
So that's part of why I like to talk about lyric games as more of a movement than a genre, because I think if I went around calling Sleepaway and Wander Home and Yzeva's, if I was like, oh, those are lyric games, people would come away from that with really wrong conclusions about the intent of the games, right? People would really not get what I'm trying to do. But they are undeniably kind of lyric games. Like, if you think about what makes a lyric game, and you're looking at those games, you're like, oh, there's a lot of elements here, right? There's deep concerns about prose and poetry. The focus is on the meter and rhythm and the prose and the language. There's mechanics that exist to elicit emotion rather than to be used in games, right? There's ways in which, like, the book itself plays with you, right? The layout of the text plays with you. Yzeva's has secret chapters that you stumble on. Sleepaway has real magic. Yzeva's has some real magic. Wander Home has the veterans move, which to me is very lyric game, right? Like, the thing we're talking about almost and your game, right? It's like one PBTA move run as a little thing. That could be the veteran's move, right? You could have that be a lyric game just on its own. It'd be like, you are a swordsman, here is the one rule for your sword, and I can just give that to you out of nowhere. And that's a lyric game, right? And it's just put into a game that is less lyrical. And so, like, that's why I kind of think of it as a movement, because for me, my work is lyric game work, regardless of what I'm making. That's kind of why people like my stuff. But not everything I'm making I'm going to market as a lyric game, because to market something as a lyric game versus think about how lyric games shape this thing are two different parts of what's going on. You know, that's kind of my feeling.
It's a really interesting distinction, lyric game versus shaped by lyric games. And that ends our second episode with Jay Dragon, but plenty more to come. So if you like what we're doing here, I would really appreciate it if you subscribed wherever you're listening to this, if you share it with someone who you think would enjoy this, and you can also support me either by buying my games of the lyric or other variety on my itch, which is breathingstories.itch.io. or you can send me a donation via my Ko-Fi, which is ko-fi.com/LoganTimmons. The intro music is Fuzzball Parade by Kevin MacLeod via Upbeat. The Lyrical Ludology logo is by Monet Jenkins, who you can find at theothermonet.com. That's all one word, theother, M-A-N-E-T.com. And I'd like to thank Maria Mousson for helping me with this outro. Remember, feel your feelings and say hi to a bird for me. Bye!